Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, good friends. Good to see you again, and welcome to this week's Reporters Roundtable. Looking back at the big news of the week from Washington, with three of our top political reporters, and me, I apologize for kind of a scratchy throat this morning. Getting buzz, most of the buzz this week, Clarence Thomas and Donald Trump. For Justice Clarence Thomas, first it was a big donor's private jet and luxury yacht. Then the donor bought his mother's house. Now we learn that the same donor also paid for his adopted son's tuition. Is this against the rules? Are there any rules? For Donald Trump, a big surprise. After attacking the network for the last 7 years, CNN turned around and offered Donald Trump 1 hour of prime time next Wednesday night, which Trump, of course, immediately accepted. And CNN is still trying to explain why they did it. Meanwhile, we seem to be getting closer to a government shutdown over the debt ceiling, but no closer to a deal to avoid fiscal disaster. What to make of it all? Well, let's turn to today's panel. Linda Feldman back with us, Washington Bureau Chief and White House Correspondent for Christian Science Monitor. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Bill.
Kirk Bedo, Managing Editor of the National Journal Hotline, joining us today from South Carolina. Hi, Kirk.
Morning, everyone. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Welcome back to you. And joining us for the first time on the Bill Press Pod, Dan Merica, national political reporter for the new online news network, The Messenger. Hello, Dan.
Thanks, Bill, for having me.
So is The Messenger up and running? Give us a quick plug here.
It is not. May 15th is you can set it on your calendars and look forward to it. I think it's going to be exciting, a new player in the media space. I think we'll cover politics, but we also have business and sports and entertainment. It's going to be a pretty broad-based online publication, and I'm very excited to get started on it.
All right. Well, congratulations, and we're pleased to give The Messenger its debut here on the on the Bill Press Pod. All right. It's hard not to start with anything other than Clarence Thomas. Now, you know, this is a man of the people, he says, Clarence Thomas. This is back a couple of years ago, actually, May 18, 2020, PBS ran a little documentary about Clarence Thomas where he said, "Oh, shucks, I'm just an ordinary guy. Here he is."
"I prefer seeing the regular parts of the United States. I prefer going across the rural areas. I prefer the RV parks. I prefer the Walmart parking lots to the beaches and things like that. There's something normal to me about it. I come from regular stock, and I prefer that. I prefer being around that."
Well, Kirk, we kind of learned that's not the case, huh?
No, we have not. And it just seems like there's, with this slow trickle out of this new reporting about Clarence Thomas's relationship with Harlan Crow, the GOP mega donor, any of these other mega rich conservative adjacent folk, it seems like it's an ethics violation roulette wheel or something like that. Every day we have something new. Just this week we had the fact that Harlan Crow paid the tuition for his, I believe it was his grandnephew, to go to school. Just this morning, or is it yesterday, we have Leo Leonard, who has apparently helped funnel consulting fees to his wife. I mean, it's just so brazen right now, and it doesn't seem like there's any real remedy for it right now, or any real appetite for a remedy for it. It's really highlighted how the Supreme Court, of all the branches of government, is just so untouchable right now, and kind of almost an anomaly in the system of checks and balances that we have.
So, Linda, what can be done about it?
So that's an excellent question. I mean, there have been hearings that people calling for more oversight, ethics rules that must be followed. But the problem is, or the challenge is, that this is the Supreme Court, emphasis on supreme. And in our system of checks and balances, it would be, many people feel, inappropriate for another branch of government to have effective oversight over the Supreme Court. And so it has been a largely self-governing body. And I honestly don't see how that changes anytime soon. We do have the power of the press. Clarence Thomas and his wife, Ginny, there's that news story out about Leonard Leo, both getting dragged through the mud in the media. But at the end of the day, what really changes? I don't think anything changes.
And Dan, what about the political implications of this? I mean, it kind of puts Republicans in a tough spot to defend, doesn't it? And yet they are. They're saying, they're just good friends.
You would think it puts them in a tough spot, but I was struck by how quickly Republicans came out and said, this is nothing. He's only being attacked because he's a conservative. I think what all of this does is it pulls the court further into this deep political divide we've seen in the country. Obviously, the court was already there, but it's just further falling down that rabbit hole in a weird way. And yeah, it'll likely impact the standing of the court. I haven't seen any, you know, recent polling data in regards to these Thomas report, this Thomas reporting that says the court is more politically divided. But you have to imagine that both sides are going to go to their corners, and you're going to see in polling that certain subset of voters think that the court has a, you know, is handling itself well, and the other side is going to think it's handling itself incredibly poorly. I was struck that Blumenthal, the senator from Connecticut, suggested that this misreporting of financial data from Thomas could be reported to the Department of Justice. That is, you know, if we're thinking about one way that this could play out, if that happens, that's certainly a way that, you know, ethics violations could be adjudicated by the Department of Justice. But as we've seen with the Department of Justice, they are a little careful to get involved in political matters and careful to step into that kind of realm. So I agree. I'm not sure how this actually plays out for Thomas, other than just the court going along and being the court. But it definitely is going to impact the standing of the court. Something we've already seen over the last few years is likely just going to get worse over the next few.
Yeah, Linda, back to something you said. It's possible, I think, that the Congress, assuming they could get the votes, could pass a bill requiring the Supreme Court to adopt an ethics code, which they do not have right now. But that gets to the tricky question of separation of powers, right?
Exactly. And another point to make, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Harlan Crow ever had business before the Supreme Court, that, at least under Clarence Thomas, right?
Not that we know of. I think you're right.
So that takes a little bit of the edge off the whole conflict of interest allegation. But I agree. This is, I feel like there needs to be a solution to this. And, you know, if not, yes, I agree that public faith in institutions has only been going down, and this certainly doesn't help.
So if Clarence Thomas got a lot of buzz, so did Donald Trump on several fronts this week. This network that I worked for proudly 6 or 7 years at CNN, Donald Trump has been at war against CNN for at least the last 7 years. We remember he tried to fire Jim Acosta, take his press credentials away. He banned CNN to the back row of the briefing room. That didn't really work. He called them fake news. He called the reporters enemies of the American people. And Kirk, CNN turned around last week by offering Donald Trump a 1 hour in prime time next Wednesday night from New Hampshire, hosted by Caitlin Collins. Is this a good move for CNN? Why are they doing it, Kirk?
Well, I think, first off, anytime you get to interview the former president, the current Republican front runner for the nomination, you have to take that interview. Now, Bill, you're right to talk about the fraught history Trump has with the network, about what the potential is here. And, you know, again, first off, from the jump, you take the interview. Second off, I'm trying to figure out what success looks like here for CNN, because the town hall format gives them a little bit of way to lean into voter questions. So it's not just Trump one-on-one with a reporter, even if it's a reporter like Caitlin Collins, who's certainly no pushover, who's a veteran of the first Trump campaign, who's been around this environment before, knows him, knows how to ask questions, good presence on TV and everything. But I'm trying to game out what a success looked like here. And I'm thinking right now, what when Trump starts talking about, you know, the rigged election, how Biden is not the rightfully elected president, what does Caitlin Collins do in that situation? Do you jump in there right there and say, former President Trump, that's a lie, that's not true? How does he react to that? And how do you keep this an informative and worthwhile exercise here? And look, I don't know about you, I'll be tuning in and I'll be watching the whole thing. I'm incredibly curious to see how this goes down. And again, you got to take that interview. I have no qualms with that.
Well, I want to challenge you a little bit on that. I don't think Donald Trump is taking the interview. CNN offered he accepted it. They offered it to him. They sought him out.
I think it actually says more about Trump than it does about CNN, if I could make that point. I think I spent 12 years working at CNN. I covered Trump's first year in the White House. I was there for all of the, CNN sucks chants at his first rallies as president. The idea that he would do a town hall with this network after all that the relationship has gone through, I think says that Trump knows he needs CNN's audience more than he acknowledged, especially during the 2020 campaign, which he lost. I also think it puts pressure on people like DeSantis, a Republican figure who has been criticized for only speaking to conservative media. It gives Trump a leg to stand on when he attacks DeSantis for kind of being in an echo chamber, because now he can point to the fact that he went on CNN, did an hour town hall, talked to these voters in New Hampshire. And I agree with what everyone has said about Caitlin Collins. She's a fantastic interviewer. She knows Donald Trump well. She knows his campaign and his administration well. And I think she will hold him to account when you raise that question about what do you do when he says the election was rigged. I think that's why she's so good at her job.
Well, Linda, isn't this just a replay of 2016, as Dan pointed out, when CNN turned their cameras over to Donald Trump? Every Donald Trump rally was covered wall to wall. Jeff Zucker later said he regretted doing that because he realized that catapulted Donald Trump to the nomination and to the White House. And here we go again.
Right. But this is a completely different context. He's the former president. He's the front runner for the Republican nomination. And this is, I think it's incredibly smart on both ends for CNN and Donald Trump to do this. It gives Donald Trump an opportunity. So it's him sort of dismissing Fox News, right? So Fox is in turmoil. We go to CNN, which is much more mainstream. And it puts him out there, and he can, he's known Caitlin a long time. Caitlin's fantastic. Used to be at the Daily Caller, so she has some cred, I think, in the conservative world. And he can fight her. They can fight each other. It could be good theater. Donald Trump, and here's the secret. Donald Trump loves the media, right? He says terrible things about us, but he loves us because we pay attention to him 24/7. Ron DeSantis actually hates the media and will not engage with mainstream media. So this really puts it right in his court. Okay, Ron, are you going to engage? Which honestly, DeSantis has to do that if he's going to be credible as a Republican candidate.
So, Kirk, who's the winner here?
The American voter. No. I think we need to see how this plays out here. Dan, I thought that was a really interesting point about how CNN is invited him on here and that Trump is acknowledging that he needs these voters and everything like that. I'll be interested to see what the Monday morning quarterbacking and post-game analysis is here. I hope we don't have, someone coming up there and talking about how this is the pivot to the general election Trump needs, as he's the front runner, or this is the moment Trump became a general election candidate or something like that. So I'm going to withhold the winner right now until we see them square off here.
Well, one thing that hasn't been stated, Dan, can we all just be honest? CNN is doing this because the ratings, they think this is going to, their ratings have been sinking under Chris Licht. They think this is going to turn things around. And Donald Trump's going to pick up some of those Fox people who aren't happy with Fox because they fired Tucker.
Well, you heard earlier in this conversation that people are going to be on the edge of their seats watching closely because it will be good TV and it will be interesting to see how both sides handle this. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not breaking any news here, but a lot of what TV journalism does is about getting ratings. I mean, I think that is not eye-opening statement. It's obvious. This is obviously about ratings, and I think it will rate well because it's a Donald Trump interview on CNN. I don't know the top of my head the last time that happened, but it has certainly been years, and so it will do well. And I'm just kind of, I will reserve judgment on who wins this bout, but I'm going to put my faith in Caitlin and her ability to hold Trump to account when he says things that aren't true, and we'll see afterwards if that's what happens.
Okay, so we will see Donald Trump next Wednesday in New Hampshire. Unlikely we will see Donald Trump in a New York courtroom in the Jean Carroll rape case, except the judge has given him until Sunday, 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon, to make up his mind if he, Trump, actually wants to appear and testify in front of the jury. Let's say he doesn't, and we're stuck with the testimony that we've heard from both sides, with the defense not really putting any witnesses on the stand. Linda, how damaging has this trial been for Trump so far, do you believe, if at all?
So it's been damaging. E. Jean Carroll, I haven't been covering this, but based on the coverage, she's been a credible witness. So true, she doesn't remember exactly when this happened, what year it was, but she had two contemporaneous witnesses, two female friends who she talked to and who testified. Honestly, I think Trump is in Ireland, and he says he might come back to the last minute, put in a personal appearance.
His attorney says he won't. He says he might. Yeah.
I seriously doubt that. I think he's going to lose. So this is a civil trial, not criminal. So preponderance of evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt. It doesn't have to be unanimous jury. So all he needs is 51%. And I think he'll get there. I think Trump is going to lose. And then we move on. And, he essentially admitted when he said that Access Hollywood tape simply reflects the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Right. Yeah. Kirk, I wanted to ask you about that. So Trump was not on the stand, but they did depose him and they played for the jury, as Linda indicated. This famous excerpt from the Access Hollywood tape, here it is again, apologize, but it's Donald Trump speaking.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy.
And that tape was played. Donald Trump was asked about it in his deposition. And as Linda pointed out, he said, well, that's true. Absolutely true. Fortunately or unfortunately, that's the way it is with stars. This is what we can do. Kirk, you got to say, didn't help his case a lot.
No, and I feel like we're in that, I think you should leave skit where the guy goes, oh my God, he admitted. But it feels like relitigating the Access Hollywood tape again just reminds me of how precarious that was. And that was probably his lowest point besides the insurrection of his political career since 2015. And yet it still wasn't enough for Republican leaders to leave him en masse. It wasn't enough for Hillary Clinton to beat him then. And I think even if we do get a ruling in favor of Jean Carroll here, it isn't going to affect him all that much politically, which is incredible to think. I mean, we're in just such incredible new territory here. It feels like Trump every few months is pushing some new ethical, moral, political boundary and finding new ground here. What I'm really surprised at so far, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised, is that none of the other folks running in the Republican primary are making this an issue. None of the other, you don't see Ron DeSantis going out there and talking about this case. You don't see Asa Hutchinson talking about, look, do we really want this guy to be the standard of the Republican Party? You don't see anybody out on the trail harping him for this. You don't see Nikki Haley doing it either. And until we start seeing his political opponents start holding him account within the own party or trying to hold his feet to the fire here, I don't know how this amounts to anything more than a shrug, unfortunately.
Yeah, what about that, Dan? I mean, let's say, and you know, we'll see, but it looks like he could easily be found guilty in this case. Are Republicans really going to say we want a man who's been found guilty of rape to be the nominee for the Republican Party and nobody challenge him on those grounds?
I think what happens is Republicans look at polling, Republican candidates look at polling, and they see how well Trump is doing despite all of this going on at the same time. I mean, polls taken at the same time as all this case has been played out show him with substantial leads in states nationally, and it's a bit cynical, but you know, they decide that they need Trump's base if they're going to be the nominee. They need people who support Trump to come to them, and I would imagine the calculation is, I can't hit Trump on personal, you know, a matter like this, and I don't want to be the first one to do it, especially because it may damage me with his base, which I'm of course going to need. And I agree, you know, Kirk is right. A lot of this, you know, maybe not the E. Jean Carroll accusation, but there were certainly accusations against Donald Trump that the Clinton campaign used during the 2016 general election. You know, the Access Hollywood tape as a great example of that was a huge moment in that campaign, and it wasn't enough for Hillary Clinton to defeat Donald Trump. So again, cynical, but you question whether voters are paying attention to this, A, and B, whether a certain subset of voters are care enough to have it swing their vote one way or the other in a deeply, you know, polarized and partisan country.
Dan, do you think it's like what Trump is saying in that deposition, while like acknowledging that unfortunately or fortunately, this is how it is, you know, you can do this stuff. Do you think it's voters' reaction to that is kind of just baked into the Trump experience here, that this guy is so just brazenly out front with what he's doing that voters are kind of like, okay, that's Donald?
I think it also plays into like an assumption that voters have about famous people and celebrity culture, especially in Republican circles, mm-hmm. which is, you know, I think is something that the Clinton campaign experienced firsthand in 2016. When the Access Hollywood tape came out, I can tell you I was the embedded reporter for CNN on that campaign. And I remember Clinton aides rejoicing, thinking that they had just won the election, basically, that this was going to be the moment that sunk his campaign. There's no way he's going to bounce back from that. They were clearly wrong. And I think that the way that played out really has reshaped the way reporters, operatives, and even candidates think about these big moments. What would have sunk a campaign previously has certainly been rejiggered by Donald Trump.
Yeah, just a quick point on that matter. We can all remember the day when for a candidate to be accused, even accused of rape,
yep.
would automatically disqualify that candidate from any consideration for any office whatsoever. So we've come a long way, not necessarily in the right direction. Hey, well, on that point, there's still a lot more news to cover here, including a big victory for the big win for the Justice Department. Let's get into that and the other news of the week with our panelists after a quick break here on the Bill Press Pod. And then we'll be back with Linda Feldman from the Christian Science Monitor, Dan Merica from The Messenger, and Kirk Beto from the National Journal Hotline. And today's roundtable on the Bill Press Pod, brought to you by the International Brotherhood of the Laborers International Union of North America, I meant to say, or LIUNA, LIUNA, the great members of the Laborers Union under Terry O'Sullivan, still the president of the Laborers Union, over 500,000 strong, very active in the construction field, rebuilding America's infrastructure. In the energy field, building not only old-fashioned pipelines, but wind turbines and solar panels, and active in the healthcare industry as well. We salute the good members, men and women of the Laborers Union, thank them for their great work rebuilding America, and thank them for their longtime support of the Bill Press Pod.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back with today's roundtable. Dan Merica joining us from the new site, The Messenger, which debuts on May 15. Kirk Beto here, managing editor of National Journal Hotline, and Linda Feldman, White House correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. So, Linda, the Attorney General of the United States, speaking to reporters yesterday and talking about a big win for the Justice Department. Here's the Attorney General.
After three trials, we have secured the convictions of leaders of both the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers for seditious conspiracy, specifically conspiring to oppose by force the lawful transfer of presidential power. Our work will continue.
So, Linda, this seditious conspiracy, this is a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal. I mean, it's a pretty rare moment when this kind of conviction takes place. And, you know, what it seemed to me that they used a pretty expansive definition. It's not as if the Proud Boys were, you know, having meetings and planning and plotting for months on end. I mean, it was a kind of in the moment thing, but they were collaborating. And the one guy who was found not guilty didn't know the others and wasn't involved in any of that in the moment activity. So there's no doubt that this is a big victory for the Justice Department, and Merrick Garland was rightly celebrating. But I think if you step back a little bit, you have to remember that far-right extremism is still out there in a rampant way. Donald Trump is running again. All the ingredients are there for this kind of thing to happen again. And I think that might temper a little bit of the celebration around these convictions.
And Kirk, doesn't this kind of though further erode the case that some Republicans have still been trying to make, that this was nothing but a group of tourists, right, visiting the White House, or a group that went to the Capitol not intending to do any harm and just suddenly broke out into violence? That's not what this conviction says.
Yeah, this wasn't a normal tour, as some members of Congress would have you believe here. I mean, Bill, I think you're right that the more convictions we have here, especially for a serious crime like sedition here, really diminishes that argument and makes it, adds to the gravity of this situation here. You know, I think a lot about how the further away we get from January 6th, the more it gets a little bit more memory hold. Now, it's really interesting to see President Biden launch his reelection campaign and Colin Allred down in Texas kind of lead with images of the insurrection and everything. Yep. I'll be interested to see how that plays out amongst voters and if other Democratic candidates for these big offices continue to lean into the messaging of January 6th, of, you know, fighting back against extremism here. But Linda, I think, made an excellent point about how the Proud Boys are going to be crippled from this. Their leader's going to prison. They have so much other litigation, civil and criminal, that could cripple them financially. But there are other less nationally known far right groups who are smaller, who have, we've seen protesting at, you know, these, you know, drag show like story hours and stuff like that. And, you know, at these state capitals when they're trying to pass this LGBTQ legislation, that the threat from this sort of extreme right, this white nationalist wing that's in this country right now, isn't going away. But the most prominent one right now, at least, has been really diminished.
So, Dan, once again, all of this kind of circles back to Donald Trump, right? Because, first of all, we remember that first debate with Joe Biden, his quick reference to the Proud Boys. Here he is.
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by.
Mm-hmm. Stand back, stand by. This is a man who has promised to pardon people who were have been convicted for January 6th. He embraced last week up in New Hampshire this woman who said that Mike Pence should be executed for what he did on January 6th. The Proud Boys, part of their defense was they called themselves Trump's army. We were just following his orders. So this is a blow to Donald Trump, too, at least potentially. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it certainly could be. And I think how he handles this going forward, how he handles groups like the Proud Boys going forward, I think will also say a lot about how big of a blow this is for the Trump and the Trump campaign. You're exactly right about embracing that woman in New Hampshire that got a lot of attention and coverage. And it's a question of, is Nikki Haley going to bring this up? Is Ron DeSantis going to bring this up? Is it too fraught for them to kind of play in that sandbox of questioning what, you know, of attacking people over January 6th, given so much of the Republican base still believes, they might believe that January 6th was wrong or the way it was handled was wrong, but so many people believe the election denialism that led to January 6th. That will be very telling. I completely agree with Kirk. It is interesting to see the Biden campaign come out so forcefully with his announcement video. I think the first images were about January 6th. I'm interested to see whether other Democratic candidates, incumbents who are running for Senate, who are going to have these wild GOP fields against them, primary fields against them, how are they going to use January 6th to tie those Republicans to people like the leader of the Proud Boys? Are they going to run on kind of a January 6th message? January 6th was a turning point. We have to stand up, et cetera, et cetera. That, you know, there was some questions right after January 6th among Democrats about how forcefully they should run on the January 6th messaging. I think that's kind of been put to bed, given the Biden campaign launched basically with their first images being January 6th messaging. It's a two-prong factor. Are you going to have Democrats continue to run on January 6th? That seems like a yes. The open question is, are Republicans going to use the Proud Boys, January 6th, all of the data points you referenced against Donald Trump? That's a big open question at this point.
Kirk, I want to come back to something you said about Colin Allred, right? Is that in Texas?
Yeah, Colin Allred.
Colin Allred. So his announcement video that he's running against Ted Cruz, he actually said on January 6th, I took my coat off, my jacket off. I was ready to confront those guys and punch them out. Meanwhile, he pointed out, he claims that Ted Cruz was hiding in a closet in his office.
Well, look, you know, Colin Allred is a former NFL player. He's a big guy. I mean, I'm not going to doubt him for any second if he's ready to rock and roll there. But I mean, that's kind of like how it is in a nutshell that race down there.
Right. No, but he made no bones about it that he's going to make that a big issue of the response again to Dan's point about January 6th going to be front and center in his campaign.
Right, and you know, this could be, you know, attributed to the effectiveness of his messages there, or the fact that he's just running against, you know, Ted Cruz, who, don't know if you know, is might not be the most popular guy in the Senate. His campaign announced today that they raised over $2 million since launching earlier this week. I know that Democrats have been chasing a blue Texas like it's Ahab and Moby Dick here, but if there's anyone who could make a serious run here, Democrats couldn't think of a better candidate than Colin Allred here. And that's going to be, it's not necessarily going to be in my top five, top six most fun races, Senate races to watch next year, but it's definitely one we're going to be keeping an eye on here at Hotline.
Okay. Meanwhile, it looks like there is a little less now than a month to go before everything falls apart. The United States runs out of money and we go bankrupt and there's a great recession and all the bad things that could happen. But will it happen is the question. Right now, all we're hearing are the claims on both sides about how to handle this. Let me play a couple and then get your response. Here is, first of all, an ad by the Majority Forward PAC, a Democratic PAC, about what Kevin McCarthy is up to.
Defaulting on our debts. In our homes, we try to avoid it. But in this house, MAGA Republicans are so extreme, they're ready to let America default, sinking us into recession, driving middle class costs up, our retirement savings down. Now, Speaker McCarthy reveals his MAGA Republican demands to wildly slash things America cares about. Education, clean air and water, even cancer research. Default or destroy. Just MAGA Republican extremism at its worst.
On the other side, Mike Lee, Republican from Utah, says, no way we're going to raise the debt ceiling. By the way, parentheses, even though they did it three times under Donald Trump without any complaint at all. But no way, Mike Lee says, we're going to do it without massive spending cuts.
Any debt ceiling increase needs to have significant, substantive, substantial spending reforms in it, or we should have no business supporting it.
Linda, we've seen this movie before.
Oh my gosh.
Is this a real threat that things are going to collapse, or is this just politics up until the 11th hour, as always?
So I think we have to take this one incredibly seriously. So the X date at this point is June 1st. That's very, very soon. Kevin McCarthy's control of the House is not, shall we say, robust. Everybody's walking a tightrope here. It's true that Kevin McCarthy was able to pass legislation and lost only the four votes he could afford to lose. That would pairing an increase of the debt limit with cuts to federal spending. So obviously, you know, dead on arrival, but he got that through. That showed us he had something. So the Biden administration is talking a good game. They say they won't negotiate, but they have to. They know they do. So Biden is having the big four from Congress in on Tuesday, the top leaders of each party from each house. And they're going to basically, this is an option to essentially negotiate spending cuts, but say that it's not tied to the debt limit. So it's a little bit of a, you know, mirage, but I think Biden's going to have to give them something and just call it, you know, maybe toward the next budget. Right. So it's not, he can't, you know, they want to get rid of his climate agenda, but that's not going to happen. There are other options out there for Biden. And the Democrats, they can do a legislative maneuver called a discharge petition, which would get around Democrats maneuvering around the Republican majority by getting a few moderate Republicans on board. And then the sort of the outer option would be for Biden to just go it alone and say that the debt limit itself is unconstitutional because the 14th Amendment of the Constitution stipulates that the government must pay its debts. So I kind of like that idea. But meanwhile, time's a wasting. We only have a few weeks till June 1st. We don't know that June 1st is when it really all comes crashing and burning down. But everybody knows that a default would be catastrophic. There was a report out from White House economists warning that it would shed the economy would lose 8 million jobs as it goes into recession. So it's bad for Americans and also, of course, politically.
Kirk, and neither party wants this to happen, right? I mean, because they know they're going to get blamed if it does.
Right. We're in the thick of the, you know, vote no, hope yes situation right now here. What I'm interested in from the political fallout on this is how both parties try and square the blame here right now. You know, we played that ad from the Democratic aligned pad Majority Forward trying to do that bank shot on McCarthy. But I just wonder if at the end of the day, the buck is still going to stop with Biden here because he is the one, you know, nominally in charge here. And if a default goes back onto him. It's just really interesting. One of the big political questions that I have right now is McCarthy's name ID amongst voters and how effectively Democrats can turn him into this boogeyman in the level that Republicans did with Nancy Pelosi over the last 20 years. I believe it was Semaphore had a poll that showed Marjorie Taylor Greene and Kevin McCarthy had the same percentage of name ID right now. And so as we go through this process here, and as the whole cottage industry of political ads, finger pointing starts sprouting up on our airwaves, I'll be interested to see how Democrats try and vilify Kevin McCarthy here.
Dan, isn't the key player here Mitch McConnell? I mean, he has a history of being an obstructionist, but also he's got a history of making deals with Joe Biden, and he's been relatively silent so far. Do you think he could be the key player, end up being the key player?
I think he will be a key player, certainly. I think he's been pretty forceful about criticizing Biden. So, the way that Biden's handled this so far, I think he said, told him to stop wasting time. He declined kind of to step in and play mediator in this, at least for now. I believe that all four of the big four, I believe he was invited to that May 9th meeting at the White House. But, I've covered DC long enough that I think that generally these things get done. Maybe it's a punt, maybe it's an actual deal, but it's something happens. But this is a different kind of negotiation. Usually people like to use the football terminology that they're on the 10-yard line, the 5-yard yeah. line, the goal yeah. line, whatever. It really feels like they're like in different football stadiums at this point and are not even playing maybe the same game because they are so far apart. And there is going to have to be some concessions, at least the current positions that are laid out. There's going to have to be some concessions on both sides. I'm interested in, Biden kind of added a layer to this over the last couple of weeks by announcing for president. It made this not just a administrative question, but now it is a far more political question about how he can spin whatever deal he gets, mm-hmm. which complicates things, frankly, a little bit. It adds another layer to it in an already complicated situation. But, I'm not a betting man, but I don't think either side wants to shut down, knowing that the blame will be enough to go around.
I'm not a betting man either, but I would bet that Armageddon does not happen, or the worst does not happen. But we'll be watching it play out over the next few weeks and following it and talking about it here on the Bill Press Pod. A great big thank you to today's panel for taking a look at the news of the week. We got to as much of it as we could. But before we let you go, there's always one story, whether you're covering it or not, whether we've talked about it or not, that caught your attention and stopped you in your tracks. We call it our favorite story of the week. Kirk, what stood out with you this week among all the other news items?
Well, amongst all this news that we've been talking about, I've been also watching a lot of the NBA playoffs. Really, really happy that the Sixers were able to steal one in Boston. We're not going to talk about the game from the other night. We stole one on the road, but there's a great story from The Ringer by Justin Verrier. It's a profile of Hubie Brown, who's a longtime NBA fixture who's been in and around the league for the past 5 decades. It's called The Painted Area is Still Calling Hubie Brown. He's now doing color commentary for ESPN. And it was just a great look at his process, his prep work, and how at 89 years old, he's still sharp as ever, still doing all these games and everything. And there is the whole political tie that, the old guy still got it, and maybe we shouldn't be so hard on Biden either. But it was a great read. I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, we always appreciate people who add a note of sports to the Bill Press Pod, because you're not going to get it from me, but some of our panelists. Linda, how about you? What caught your attention this week?
So I am a sports nut, and I'm from Boston, and I'm still trying to overcome the absolutely devastating loss of the Boston Bruins. Best season ever in the NHL, and they went out in 7 games. I am despondent. But on a happier note, my favorite story of the week took place last Friday afternoon, so I think it still qualifies.
Yes.
I walk into the White House grounds, and there's my friend Marek from Polish Radio. No, I'm sorry, it was Thursday, but I wrote this up on Friday. Anyway, sorry. There's Marek with his 10-year-old daughter, She had just been invited into the Oval Office with one other kid. It was Take Your Kids to Work Day.
Oh, my God.
She, Nina, little Nina, 10 years old, smart as a whip, and the son of a CNN cameraman, were both spontaneously invited into the Oval Office by Joe Biden. She had shouted a question to him about Poland. What did you like about your what about your trip to Poland? What did you enjoy there? And he gestures to her and invites her into the Oval, and she gets to sit at the Resolute desk. She and the other kid get to pose underneath the desk like John John, the old iconic picture of John John. And anyway, she's, I think, a little reporter in the making, having shouted a question at Joe Biden without her father's prodding, he insists. Although, here's my favorite line. I wrote this up. My favorite line was, no, she doesn't want to be a reporter. She wants to be a theoretical physicist like Sheldon in The Big Bang Theory. So go Nina. I'm on Team Nina.
Oh, great. Oh, great story. Yeah, I love. Too bad we all weren't there to see that. And Dan, we'll wrap with your favorite story of the week.
Mine is also sports, but I'm going to take us to Italy, actually. I'm a huge soccer fan, and Napoli, the Italian soccer team, won their first title in 33 years.
Whoa.
They won it last night by drawing with another Italian side, and they cannot be caught now. It's just the third time in their history that they've won the title, and it's the first time since Diego Maradona, the Argentinian icon, left the club. I mean, to kind of get at how important he was to the club because of those two titles he won, they renamed the stadium after him after he passed away. That's how big he was.
Yeah.
It's this awesome, diverse team, Nigerian striker, Georgian winger, South Korean defender. It's just like a fantastic story. But the reason it's my favorite is because of the images and the videos of the party in Napoli after they won the championship. I mean, it's grown men crying, fireworks everywhere, pizza, wine, beer. It's like the best, biggest party you could ever imagine in a fantastic European city. I highly recommend. I don't have a story exactly to pitch, but I'm going to say go online, check out the video, check out the photos, because it is pure joy in sports form.
Okay. Well, by the way, if you're going to have a party and a big celebration, Naples is the place to do it too. It's a wild town. So for my favorite story, we have one of our sons and his family, two of our grandchildren, live in the state of Oregon. So we spend a lot of time in Oregon, and I was delighted to see this week that it looks like Oregon is moving into the 21st century. The Oregon House of Representatives passed a law this week allowing the residents of Oregon to pump their own gas. Until this time, since 1951, from traveling around Oregon, you cannot pump your own gas. You have to have an attendant fill up your pump. This bill now passed the House. It is going to the Senate, where it looks like it's going to pass. The governor says she will sign it into law, so you will not need an attendant fairly soon, no longer need an attendant to pump your gas in the state of Oregon, which leaves, here's my challenge to the panel, which leaves only one other state in the country where you will still have to have an attendant, where you're not allowed to pump your own gas. Anybody know which it is?
It's New Jersey.
You're right. Jersey. New Jersey.
I hate that. I totally hate that. It's horrible.
I know. So someday we can hope that even New Jersey will move into the 19th century, right, on the gas front. All right. Hey, great job today, panelists. Thank you so much. Thanks. Big thank you to Dan Merica. Thanks, Dan. Congratulations on the Messenger. We want to get you back. Kirk Bedo from National Journal Hotline. Thanks again, Kirk, for being here. And Linda Feldman from the Christian Science Monitor. Thanks to our panelists. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, get up early tomorrow morning, 5:20 a.m. is when the carriage, the Queen and the King and Queen, leave Buckingham Palace on their way to Westminster Abbey. You know you want to be there for every moment of that. 5:20 a.m. East Coast time. I won't be watching. But also invite you back next Tuesday for the next edition of the Bill Press Pod. We're going to be talking with the great Norm Ornstein about something we discussed this morning about the Supreme Court and whether or not they will ever adopt or should adopt any ethics guidelines. That's next Tuesday, the next edition of the Bill Press Pod. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.